TJ Buffenbarger.
Thank you, Beth. Coming to you from the Engine Pro Studios, just outside of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Joining me, as always, in the co-pilot seat, Trevor Hollis. Trevor, how are you doing tonight?
Excellent. Awesome to be back.
Yeah, it is. Of course, we want to remind you to please rate, subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, Stitcher. You can go on Podbean. Also, a couple other outlets, Google Play Store, too. And go ahead and subscribe. Give us a rating. We would appreciate that. And Trevor, for once, it's just us. We're just going to hang out for a little bit. Life is crazy right now because racing season's kind of getting cranked up. And it's just been busy for both of us. So we thought it'd be a good chance just to hang out and talk about racing.
Yeah, for two guys that work a lot around the racing world during the summer months, it sure sneaks up on you. You sit here and you think about it all winter long and how much you miss it. Well, you not as much because you're still busy with it, but me, I sit here and there comes a point where I'll watch pretty much anything that appears to be a race. And now we're 1 week away from the opening season at the track that I work at, and we're talking about snow.
Yeah. Well, hey, full disclosure, for those of you that don't know, we're both in Michigan. And as of this podcast, we're recording this Wednesday night. We're supposed to get 8 to 10 inches of snow overnight tonight. Now, this is the middle of April. And people are, of course, you know, bread, milk, French toast. We're going to get everything. And, you know, it's almost like in the South. And when, like, they get a half inch of snow. But so everyone's freaking out, and I'm just thinking to myself, why are we surprised by this? We every April we get snow. This is maybe, all right, so we're what, like April, what's today? I don't even know.
April 5th.
So today is April 5th. It's the first week of April. I mean, Grant, we're not in the UP where there probably is snow still standing, but no one should be surprised by this. I mean,
it's disappointment. It's disappointment because it's very clear that Mother Nature is telling us not to start our seasons this early.
Well, at least up here, I mean, I've left this state to go to races in Ohio multiple times with snow on the ground. I remember calling Eldora Speedway from a payphone down by Coldwater because there's still snow. And we're like, hey, is it snowing there? And it's actually Earl picked up the phone, of all people. And he's like, no, but leave it up there.
The moral of the story is TJ's old enough to use a payphone.
Yeah, correct. And not only that, but I mean, there's been a couple Attica openers where there's been snow in the ditch all the way to the racetrack, like into Ohio. But it's going to be a little sloppy for a couple of days. And some schedules have been moved back, which just prolongs Trevor's excitement for what he has this weekend. Because Trevor, you're making your first trip to Kokomo.
I am. My dad and I are going to head down Saturday morning. Of course, today, as you said, TJ, recording this on Wednesday, they did announce that they're moving it back one day. So instead of a Friday-Saturday show, they're going to run it on the Saturday-Sunday. And, you know, from what you've told me, from what others have told me, there's going to be a lot of moisture in the area in the days leading up. So hopefully that doesn't affect things too much. But I can't. I'm so excited. I'm excited to see a new racetrack. I'm excited to go to a racetrack as a spectator. I'm excited to see non-wing sprint cars and midgets, which I haven't seen midgets since the Four Crown Nationals, maybe about 10 years ago. So I can't wait.
Huh. Yeah, it Trevor, it's going to ruin you for everything else the rest of the year.
That's what everybody has told me.
It is just going to absolutely ruin you. Your jaw might hit the ground a little bit at this place. It is probably one of the neatest racetracks in the country, if not the neatest. A lot of things going on over there. And, of course, the Midwest opener for the National Midget Series, which actually, right now, if you kind of do the math, mainly because of Keith Coons, but if you do the math, there might actually be more full-time USAC National Midget Car teams than sprint car teams this year. They're going to follow the whole tour, which is just mind-boggling to think about. If you, even in the past 15, 20 years, I would have never guessed that happening.
Well, we kind of talked last week after the show a little bit about that and about the resurgence of midget car racing, and how you had made a comment that for so long it was just so cost prohibitive. And now I don't know if maybe it's a reflection of the way the economy's coming back around a little bit more, but drivers are getting back behind the wheel of the midgets. And as you say, possibly, I think, maybe a bigger car count in the midgets on Saturday and Sunday than there might be in the wings in the non-wing sprint cars.
I think it's still cost prohibitive. It still doesn't make a lot of fiscal sense when you look at it.
Well, but what it, does in racing?
True, but exceptionally in midget racing. But I think there's a couple of factors there. The economy is, I agree with you 100%, has seemed to spur a little bit more. We're seeing teams travel more. There's going to be a lot of Pennsylvania teams coming out to Kokomo that you'd see with ARDC and some other people. And they seem to be taking on the national races more frequently now. That's one thing we've been noticing, trend of these Eastern teams coming out and running. Obviously, Keith Coons and Toyota fielding six race cars or more at a time, five, six, whatever. It definitely doesn't hurt. But you have people like Chad Boat. You have people, Brady Bacon, who have good single car efforts that are quality cars that could win any night. And you throw in whatever Power Eye guys might show up or Illinois guys. And another thing is, once they took the midgets off the blacktop, there's been this movement to kind of keep the midgets on smaller racetracks, which is something people preached for years. And about the only big racetracks here now are Belleville and Eldora. And obviously when you're dealing with a very volatile midget engine, that helps. They're a bit moodier than a sprint car. And, I think people have warmed up to that. It's always been a bigger thing in Illinois to run the smaller tracks with the midgets, and that's really what they're designed for. So, I mean, it makes sense, and I think it seemed that has helped it more than anything. If you look at the schedule, you only have to run a couple of half miles. You're not having to run IRP, Winchester, all these monster mile paved tracks and things like that. I think at one point there was that made sense. I don't think it does now, especially with everything being on dirt too. And you see a lot of racetracks downsizing tracks and whatnot. You know, Tri-City was a half mile. It's a 3/8 now. We've seen it up here with a couple of racetracks. There's a lot of different things going on there that has helped this along a little bit. And I think USAC's got good leadership right now. Levi Jones, a lot of the people, Kurt Spridgen, everyone over there are doing a good job. And I think how often, you know, Trevor, we've seen this a lot where you see whether it's a racetrack or a series, if you have good people running it that care and really put good effort into it and make good decisions, it ends up showing in the actual product.
Well, I think the interesting thing is, especially with Levi Jones, is he was part of the, for him, he kind of came alongside, in my mind, the downside of midget racing. So he saw what happened and he can kind of compensate and say, look, this is what happened back when I was at my prime. I want to avoid this, so this is what we need to do. And you know, I don't think it's an inmates running the asylum type of thing at all. It's experience, it's knowledge, it's a guy that's been behind the wheel that knows what the drivers think and knows these cars very well, that is saying, this is what we need to do. We can bring this back. We can make it work again. You know, I just to throw it to the exact opposite end of the spectrum. A couple of dates ago, they had, 33 Silver Crown cars?
Yeah, on a half mile. Which, even when Silver Crown was going really well, the half miles didn't draw 28, 29 cars. So,
I remember going to Eldora, and there was 18 to 20 Silver Crown cars for the Four Crown Nationals. So, yeah. It's USAC is in a growing place right now, and that's great to see.
It's an evolving place. It's kind of an interesting place right now. When you talk about Levi, you talk about a guy that's driven them, owned them, worked on them, now officiates them. So he's got the angle that you need. He's kind of done everything, which kind of helps. And there's good people over there working right now. I think everyone's got a lot of respect over there, and it seems to be working for him. And the same thing with, you know, Kokomo. It's just Kokomo's the perfect, like, explanation when you see some racetracks modernize a bit, like when they change their layout, whatnot, maybe to fit more modern race cars. And I'm a guy that loved the old Kokomo. I mean, in midgets, the old Kokomo were spectacular. It was actually a midget track when it was built. So when they reconfigured it, though, it's like everything you should do when you reconfigure a racetrack for modern day race cars. It was wide. It's banked enough to produce 2, 3, 4, 5 wide racing, and it has really good dirt. You can't really ask for much more than that.
I'm excited to see what it has to offer. I'm going in there with a completely open mind. I don't know what to expect because my outside of the state of Michigan traveling has been very limited in the last 7 to 10 years. I've done a lot in the state of Michigan. So I'm excited to get outside the state of Michigan into Indiana, you know, and cause down there it's non-wing racing, it's midgets, it's open sprint cars, it's stuff like that. That makes me very excited.
It's going to ruin you. You're going to be ruined for the rest of the year. So with that, moving on a little bit, it's snowing, it's awful and outside, so we have plenty of time. One topic we missed last week that we both had some interesting takes on, Stevie Sussex now behind the wheel as of last weekend, the Buffalo Wild Wings car. There was a lot of talk about that, and we just glanced over it. We were kind of in a hurry to keep the podcast under a certain time, and oh, crud, we forgot to talk about this a couple weeks ago. And the very public exit of Kevin Thomas Jr., which is kind of interesting. It's kind of different with social media now. These things used to kind of happen. You wouldn't see much about him. They'd part ways. You might see a quote in the paper, maybe if you got the guy or something you could actually print. But now, you know, these drivers and these teams have these outlets. And they can just kind of, they can go on a podcast, which they did with Jack Slash, which JT Jr. did. You tweet about it, whatever, and you have it, like, right there. You know they're side of it. It's kind of an interesting thing. I don't want to call it interesting. It's just kind of voyeuristic, kind of unusual, almost uncomfortable.
I know what you're saying. As a younger guy that kind of, I'm a avid podcast listener. It's an interesting thing because you feel like you're more a part. It's, you know, you look at Facebook, you look at Twitter and these social media websites, and there's that wall. There's that technology wall between you and who you're trying to communicate with. Then you listen to these podcasts and you realize that guys like Kevin Thomas Jr., some of these, they're just people like you and I, and you don't think of the things that they go through. You think they get to go in and strap into a sprint car and race 60, 70 times a year. But hearing that interview, and it really put the perspective on the business side of things, okay, and how different it is than what you see when you just go to the racetrack.
Here's what I have to say about that whole situation is, there's always the person you know that looks at a significant someone they want are interested in romantically, let's say across the room. And that romantic person might have a truckload of issues. Like, you know it going in. You know they've burned through boyfriends, girlfriends, or whatever. They might be a little bit unusual. They may have some kind of quirk. And you look at them and you go, I can fix that. And I like them. There's that thing, but I can fix that. That's the way I kind of view this situation. Is you look at it and you go, wow, maybe I can be the one to fix that. And to me, when you take on that relationship and you get dumped there, you can't be mad about that. I mean, you can be mad about it, but you can't be surprised. I mean, I'm like, is it a surprise? Yeah. I'm like, are you serious? Like, really? I can't imagine this being a huge surprise to anybody.
Well, one of the things that is, I guess my different take on it is, if you're going to expect something of somebody, and you look at a guy like Kevin Thomas Jr., very limited wing sprint car experience, great success in the non-wing cars. He had a great year last year with the teams he drove for in the non-wing sprint cars in USAC. You can't expect him to come in. And for crying out loud, he ran, what, 5 races with them, and he won one. Now, it wasn't against World of Outlaw caliber competition. I get that. But he jumped in a wing sprint car, which is completely backwards from everything he grew up running, and he was running solid. If you really want your team to be successful, are you going to pull the trigger on him 5 races into the year? Are you going into it, are you going to say, okay, listen, Kevin, I know you don't have a lot of experience in these wing cars, so we're going to give you some room, we're going to give you some time, and it just surprised me that the leash was so short. And granted, we don't know maybe the full story. We don't know if it was a personalities clashing type of situation, which is entirely possible. You see that in sports all the time. But it just seemed to me like it was so quick. He was showing promise, possibly would have had some success, and then all of a sudden, bam, he's out of the ride.
You know, so I don't have the fiscal wherewithal to field a race car team like that, and that is a first class operation. If you
absolutely,
it's really nice. So anybody that's actually putting up the money to do that, you know what, you run it however you want it. I mean, at that point, if you're doing that, you're not, you know, no one's, the owner's not doing that to put food on the table, obviously. I mean, it is something they enjoy. And to me, if that's the way, if they're that particular about the way they want it run and you have a short leash, hey, you know what? It's their sandbox. They can do whatever they want with it. And to me, if I was approaching a situation like that, and if it was a job or anything else, I always, you know, I would do my homework and kind of go, look, you know, what's the previous situation? Like I said, if you go out with the person that goes burns through a lot of people, you can't be surprised when you get dumped. I mean, it's all there is to it. And right. I view this very much the same way. And this used to be a much more common thing. You know, guys, there would be teams that would burn through drivers all the time. Difference is now, we have a lot of driver-owned race teams. We have a lot of family-owned race teams, which we rarely see the family kick it, the kid to the curb. If they do, then they usually get out of the sport. There's only a handful that haven't. Mm-hmm. So you see those two situations, or that driver is bringing enough money to the situation that you have to ride it out because that's what's keeping the car on the road. So, or there's sponsor commitments, or when you get to the World of Outlaw level and some, there's various other commitments there that you kind of have to ride it out. But growing up, this was like nothing unusual. I mean, the only, you know, there were owners that would fire people bi-weekly. I think Danny Smith and Jack Hewitt and various people drove for all of them at some point. And I looked at it and I go back to that analogy. Can't when you go out with that one particular person, can't be surprised when it doesn't work out. And view this very much the same way. And is it the right or wrong way to do it? Hey, it's their sandbox, their money, and do however they want it. And if we had that, you know, wherewithal to do that, would we do it differently? I can't necessarily answer that because I'm not in that position. I might have a short leash too if I'm making that investment and I'm not getting the results I want. But it's an interesting situation to say the least. And we wanted to touch on it and just kind of see what was going on. Things starting to turn around here locally too. We've got some stuff happening. Don't want to leave our local audience out of the loop. And Trevor, we have some stuff coming up. Our season up here is about, you know, like 3 weeks away, you know, so we have some sod stuff, some GLSS.
Yep.
MTS at the end of May, some pavement stuff mixed in there. So we have that to look forward to too. Some guys have made their way out of the state and ran. Ryan Grubaugh's performance at Mansfield surprised me a bit. They came out of the box halfway decent, and he's been on the shelf for a couple of years.
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody recently about Ryan Grubaugh, and we were talking about, man, I'm surprised he got, you know, that caliber of ride after being out of the sport for so long. And let's not forget the fact that he is a former Sprints on Dirt champion. I mean, it's not like he never had success. It's not like he was not very, very competitive. I'll never forget watching him at Crystal when he bounced off the wall, did a 360 in midair, landed on all four wheels, and kept going. I mean, he can wheel a sprint car, and he's going to be good in that ride.
Yeah, he was pretty fast right off the bat. There's some hooks there. One of his former mechanics is working on that car, probably helped him get in it, or recommended him, at least, I would imagine. And I think it's going to be an interest. That's the wild card combination. I mean, they look better at Mansfield than I thought they would. I was surprised that, A, they got out that early. Talking to Ryan, they're not going to be back out till that Crystal opener now. And then Ryan Rule got out as well, did very well opening week at Attica, actually using an engine from the Adgate family. Ken and Lexi Adgate actually is their motor they had in the car, and they actually might run that a few times. So that was actually a 410 in that car, and Ryan was able to make the show down there, and he indicated that you might see them early in the season a few more times out.
Yeah, April 29th, I believe, is the date of that first sod show at Crystal, and it will be fascinating to watch Rule, Grubaugh, and some of those guys. We'll see who comes back from the 2016 campaign with the Sprints on Dirt, which, of course, that season was still get rid of some of the growing pains about the new rules package. So
I thought they actually did really well car counts throughout the whole year. It actually exceeded my expectations. And I'm kind of curious because Brian Smith's not going to run the full campaign this year, so we're going to have a new champion out of the deal. I'm kind of curious to who looks at that situation and sees the success they had last year and goes to that thinking they're going to, you know, it looks like something they want to do. I'm hearing rumblings of various people that have never left one particular track or have not traveled extensively that are talking about doing it. Now, until they pull in the gate, I don't really buy it, but we'll see. It sounds promising. I'm very curious to see what that's going to look like. And also, the other situation on the other side of the coin is the GLSS-NRA relationship. That's a lot of traveling this year for teams that haven't traveled as much in the past. But if you go far enough back, they used to travel quite frequently. So to me, the question will be, I'm not worried about the quality of competition or the events. I think those are going to be great events as well. But how many people are going to tackle that entire thing is going to be really interesting to watch because it's going to be a tough series. That thing is going to be pretty deep, but also it's going to be a bit of a grind, and it'll be interesting to see who can survive the travel of that thing.
Well, I think one of the interesting things that Barry Marlow does with the Great Lakes series is he isn't afraid to make it an event weekend. And by that, I mean, like, I look at the I-96 show where he's going to have the Great Lakes Sprint Series. He is going to have the promotional backing of the NRA, but he's also going to have on that bill as well the Michigan Traditional Sprints. So, you know, that's the difference. I feel like that's the difference between Great Lakes Sprint Series and SOD is Barry and the Great Lakes Sprint Series. They make it a destination event, I guess you could say. Not that the racing's any less between either one of them. Both of them are great racing, great wing sprint car racing. I just feel like that's maybe a little bit more of a priority to Barry is the show and the experience of sprint car racing, where Assad comes in. It's business. It's you know what you're going to get. You know what I'm saying, kind of along those lines?
Keep digging. Okay, here's my thing with that. I, you know, the SOD deal has so much brand equity up here. And that's actually and I don't think either one of them cares any less about or more about the show. I think they both pay attention to it very keenly from what I've seen behind the scenes talking to people. They go about it a little differently, but they end up about the same place. The thing is when you the SOD show, the way it's run, and you put on that show, you book it up here, and for a promoter, it works. Fiscally, it works. The numbers work and everything. That's why it's really tough for us to get things like All-Star shows and USAC shows, and because, A, promoters don't have the equity or the time to build up another program, or it's not price point specific, or if they do, let's say you book an All-Star show that costs X amount of money, and you book a SOD show that's less, you end up maybe more people for that All-Star show, but it ends up at the end of the day ringing up at the same number at the end of the day. So am I going to take four times the risk to book that All-Star show or whatever else it might be, ASCS, whatever, or am I going to book a SOD show where there's less risk? I'm going to make the same amount of money, almost guaranteed. I'm going to have a guaranteed field of cars. More than likely, I have anywhere between 16 to 20 cars. I have a name people have recognized for 30 plus years, and it works. And we are lucky to have that. Sometimes we might take that for granted a little bit up here, but you look at other places, like I look at the Northwest, and I look at some other places that struggle with that, would just kill to have something that solid. And we are so lucky because we have that. We have GLSS, we have MTS, and we have two pavement series, three, actually, if you count the Nowing cars. We have all that to pick from, and of that group, there's at least, five of them are relatively solid. Three, I'd say a couple are extremely solid, you know, and SOD's got the brand equity. To me, you know, we're really lucky to have that. Do we have an Attica Fremont situation? No. Do we have something that's better than probably you know, outside of maybe the hotbeds of Indiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio, those type places, do we have something that's better than a lot of other places? Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that, like I said, even I take for granted at times. I kind of look back and go, wow, you know, I'm really lucky that if, you know, I don't want to have to go 4 hours away to see a show, I've got one I can cover relatively close that there's audience interest in and people want to go to.
Yeah, you know, a couple years back when John Knight made the decision to change to a different tire for the new Sprints on Dirt, he was explaining that to me at the Sprints on Dirt banquet. And when he explains it, you just – he does it good because, yeah, he explains it. He explains what's going on, and you just get excited. You get excited. Man, Sod's going to be really interesting this year. If nothing else, it's going to be interesting, you know. And I just specifically remember thinking that, and I agree with you 100%. Sod is a name that I think back a couple of last season, there was a call made to me about booking the show, and somebody said, you what do you think? Should I do it? And I go, well, yeah, you know, you're asking a sprint car fan if you should book a sprint car show. Absolutely. And then we talked about it. You know, you can make the same amount of money, put the same amount of butts in the stands with so much less risk. And nobody has to say anything more than that. Yeah, it made perfect sense to me.
That should probably, you know, give our audience an insight on what that, you know, what goes into that. And that's kind of the reality of the situation up here, and it's not a bad thing. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Sod brings. Now, first, Sod wasn't necessarily, John was maybe a little bit like, man, because I wasn't on the fence. I was just like, I'm more of a wait and see guy. I'm not one to just jump on the bandwagon when something new or somebody's trying something a little bit different. I'm more of the guy, I want to see this play out. I'm not going to go about it negatively or positively. I want to see what it, you know, it's got to pass the eye test. That's what it comes down to. And they were a little bit frustrated with that, I think. And I'm like, dude, I just want to see it. And I pretty much bought in after seeing it. I was pretty impressed. And I think it accomplishes what they are looking to do with that. I don't think it's going to be a situation that would work for everyone. I think it's a situation that works up here, and I think it's going to benefit us long term. One of the more interesting things about the whole situation between GLS and Sod, the dynamic that I found interesting, was we've actually, more so than the rules, have created two segments. We've got a segment that wants to travel and challenge themselves and go to places like Lima, Fremont, Attica, travel around. But there is a segment of the sprint car population up here that is perfectly happy running right here and maybe making one, maybe two trips out of state. And I think that, to me, is maybe even the bigger deciding factor than the tires, the engines, and whatever else, is how aggressive the scheduling is. Because I think what it does is, and this is why I think both series can make it, because for the more racer wants to be a little more aggressive with their travel, their challenge, you know, they want to take on more races and stuff, they can go do that GLSS thing or whatever. And if you're looking to run for a championship, you want to run like 15, 16 shows, maybe 18 eventually down the road. Hey, look, that Sod championship's perfect, and it's reasonably traveled. And I think it offers something to two entirely different, like, budgets, mentalities, however you want to say it, or both, actually.
It's just two different visions for the series.
Exactly. And I think there's more than enough room for both of them because they're different in that regard. And I think we're going to be able to fit from that in the long term. So, well, Trevor, man, we set out to do 20 minutes, and it's 40 minutes later, we're still talking. So, man, I have a safe trip down to Kokomo. Who knows? You may see me Saturday. I may bounce in there if I have time, if I can the job that actually puts food on the table and pays the mortgage, if that that goes better, we can you might see me. But man, you are gonna have such a great time down there, and I can't wait to hear you tell us about it next week.
Oh, I can't wait either. I've been having some stories. I think my dad and I are planning on maybe, well, was going to be Saturday morning, but I think probably Sunday morning we might make the 45-minute trip and take a lap through the Indy Hall of Fame Museum there.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Oh, you got to take the lap around the track if you're going.
We've done it. This will be our third time visiting, and we absolutely take the lap around the track and listen to the history and – do whatever we can.
Yeah, maybe you'll get a chance. They're putting, they're doing a new Foyt display there, so you might get to see some of that too. It's gonna be some of Foyt's work on some midgets too, so you'll are gonna be included in that, so you'll be able to see that as well. So that's gonna wrap up this edition of the TJSlideways.com podcast. I have to thank Trevor. We got to hang out for once. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was nice. We'll have to do this more often.
I was going to say, I think about once a month, you'll probably be stuck with just us. But I thank Trevor for this edition of the podcast and the co-host seat. If you're getting out racing, I hope it doesn't rain or snow, and you actually get to see some racing this weekend. Thank you, and good night.
Thank you for listening to the TJ Slideways podcast.